Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about the occult, witches, and more with you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Mitch Horowitz as well. Mitch's website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll get to your calls as well. Mitch, let's finish up talking about Ronald Reagan again, who dabbled with the occult, didn't he?
He really did. You know, Reagan was very forthright about it, actually. In his own memoirs, he readily acknowledged that one of his closest friends was Carol Reiter, who was a famous astrologer. He was the only astrologer ever to appear on the cover of Time magazine, which he did in 1969. Reagan was friends with Eden Gray, a name that some of your listeners will recognize. She has written some of the most popular guides to tarot cards, and he was very forthright about all of this. He talked about UFO sightings. Obviously, his wife Nancy was famously into astrology, but Reagan described premonitory dreams, a belief in numerology. He was friends with the psychic Jean Dixon. This was part of Reagan's life. There was no way to easily characterize the man. And that's one of the things I love about our country, in a sense. You know, you know, in one way, Reagan is viewed as this buttoned-up conservative guy, and that was true. But in another way, he was this very wild guy with a lot of New Age interests. And we're all like that. We all have a mosaic of elements that make up who we are. And I think we should be free about acknowledging that.
Back to Aleister Crowley, too, for a bit. Was he indeed a witch?
I don't view Crowley as a witch. He was a magician. He was an artist. He was somebody who was trying to revive ancient religious ideas. He was a brilliant man. Personally, he could also be a very cruel man. He could be violent. He was abusive to some of his students, verbally and otherwise. I admire him, but he's not someone who I personally would have wanted to know.
And with all of the things that have been going on with witchcraft, what is black magic?
Black magic is really when you are using spell casting or some kind of magical or spiritual practice to denigrate or to disadvantage another person. You know, look, we do the same thing all the time when we engage in gossip or spreading rumors or talebearing. It's incredibly destructive. If you bring into that some kind of ceremonial religious ritual, that is fairly characterized as black magic. And I believe in the law of reciprocity. Anybody who engages in black magic, just like anybody who engages in gossip, is opening themselves up to pain in their own lives.
Let's take some calls here for you. We have, we have Brian in Sacramento, California. Hey, Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good,
I noticed he was talking about those evil companies, and don't the evil companies use pagan symbols? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, symbols from the ancient world do crop up in corporate symbols and advertising. For example, Fidelity Investments uses the eye and the pyramid, the same symbol that appears on the back of our dollar bill. But I think they use these things more because they're just magnetic, attractive symbols, and they do have power, rather than, you know, being engaged in some sort of ceremonial magic or anything like that. But if you look around, you will see the pyramid image just everywhere in corporate symbols because it's a magnetic image. It's a powerful image.
How about Procter & Gamble with that moon-like image?
A lot of rumors about Procter & Gamble. They have to keep changing their logo because they can't keep on top of the rumors. I don't think anybody who has evil intent is tipping us off by incorporating any nefarious symbols into their logo. I think, in fact, the most bland companies, the most boring companies, are the ones that are most likely to be ripping us off. The real danger comes from places that are seemingly benign, but are not actually operating in our best interests.
This is an amazing field, though, isn't it? Investigating all this.
It's wonderful. You know, and I mean, you know, it helps you to realize that the ancient past really isn't so ancient. The old practices aren't so far away. I mean, look, Halloween itself comes from an ancient Celtic festival where people used to celebrate the recently departed. They would light bonfires. They would have parties. They would go from house to house, really celebrating the dead, worshiping one's ancestors. When kids go around trick-or-treating today, which is actually a fairly recent practice here in America, it's an echo of a really ancient practice that our Celtic ancestors used to engage in literally thousands of years ago. They would go to house, dressed up, pretending to be the spirits of departed loved ones, asking for drinks or asking for treats or cakes or something like that. You know, we're really more connected to the ancient world than we realize.
Yeah, we really are. Next up, let's go to Elizabeth in San Francisco, west of the Rockies. Hey, Elizabeth, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to thank Mitch for the way he's representing witchcraft practices. Remind everybody that, you know, there's only one real true law, if you will, in witchcraft, the reed, do as you will and harm no others.
Yeah.
Kind of like the golden rule. And right. I myself, I'm an RN, a single mom of two daughters. I serve on a city council committee and consider myself a Christian, but I teach meditation with Buddhist practices and I practice witchcraft. So it's just, it's not like you can be put in a box and, you know, good, bad, evil, indifferent. You know, it's like, I don't know, just a blend of beliefs.
That's wonderful. You know, George, this is why I love your show, because where else do you hear from listeners like that? Everything she said is just so right on, you know, and what an American voice. You know, she's a Christian. She practices witchcraft. There's no contradiction there, because the golden rule, or as she was saying, the witchcraft reed, which is do what thou wilt and harm none. That's what underscores all of our ethical philosophies. And if you cleave to that, you're not going to veer off onto the wrong path, and you can engage in all kinds of traditions. So I think that's right on.
So if you have a youngster this Halloween and they want to dress up like a witch, would you let them?
Of course, of course. Now, you know, there are some issues that people have sometimes with the black robes and the conical hat, because some people very correctly point out that, you know, that's a kind of cultural stereotype and that can perpetuate bad vibes. But I think that if a kid wants to dress up like a witch and has an awareness that this isn't an evil thing, this is a beautiful ancient thing, I say right on.
Lee in Minnesota, thanks for calling, Lee. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I'm a practicing sorcerer.
All right.
I've been practicing for many years, and I just wanted to say that it works, and it produces tangible results. And I think that a lot of the benefits to the scientific and medical field, mm-hmm. a lot of the magic will produce results for that, I think, as well as many of the cures can be found in magic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff is found to be quite potent.
How did you get involved in this, Lee, in the first place?
When I was a young kid, I talked to another kid in school while we were painting a house, and he introduced me to it, and after that I just got into it and realized that a lot of the spell castings were potent enough to produce a tangible result that I liked.
Look, you sound like a good guy too, but did you ever dabble with the evil part of any of this?
No, I did not. I know there's that stuff out there, but I also believe the law of karma, what goes around comes around.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
I don't want to get into that.
All right, great. Thanks, Lee, for sharing that. He's right about that.
Oh, yeah. Look, if there's one universal law that we all live under that's inescapable, some people call it karma, some people call it the golden rule, some people call it the law of reciprocity. Whatever you engage in does come back to you. So anybody who engages in anything resembling black magic, they're opening themselves up to terrible influences. And I think the vast majority of people who practice Wicca are just uniquely sensitive to that fact. And I think we're hearing that among the callers.
I knew a guy who sold his company for about $200 million with his brother in St. Louis. And he used to tell people, and he'd go up to them and he'd say, do you know what the golden rule is?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people would say it and he'd say, no, that's not right. The golden rule is he who has the gold rules.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, I would say a person who's really happy, doesn't need to go up to people and sort of challenge
them. No,
like
you
that.
Don't need to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, I might question whether things really worked out well for the guy. I mean, he has a lot of resources, obviously, but if you're really happy, you tend to leave other people alone. You don't need to go up and kind of push other people like that.
Next up, Michael is in Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Michael, go ahead.
Hello, hello. Mitch, in 2001, one of the most responded to broadcasts on Coast to Coast was a woman who called herself Harlot.
And Michael, your phone is very muddy. Can you...
Let's see if I can get it any better. Is that better?
Yeah, it does sound better.
Okay. She was a practicing witch. Her name was Harlot in 2001. Art Bell interviewed her several times, at least two that I heard.
Uh-huh.
And she made no bones about it. She wanted to destroy Christianity. She said there were many other witches combined with her in this effort. She said they would flood the airways. She said witchcraft would take over in the schools, everything that your children are involved in. Now, this is a woman who had been an evangelical Christian. Her father was a evangelical preacher, but he treated her so badly that she wanted to destroy Christianity. Now, many of her predictions have come true, so here's my question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You say there are the black magic witches. Harlot said that she was one.
Mm-hmm.
You say that they have powers. And, of course, we heard from Evelyn Taglini that they do have powers.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is this. How much power can they have collectively?
Mm-hmm.
Have they destroyed other nations, as some evangelical preachers say they have, such as Haiti? Have they destroyed other nations in the past? And do you believe that the drug gangs who practice witchcraft are on an agenda to destroy the Christian civilization of the United States?
Mm. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I would say, first of all, that if I encountered that woman, I would say to her that if you had an evangelical father who was cruel or abusive to you, I would challenge you not to try to destroy Christianity, but to fulfill Christianity. If your father was cruel to you, then he obviously was calling himself a Christian in name only. So I would challenge that person not to destroy something, but to fulfill it. And I would say the vast majority of people practicing Wicca have no interest in destroying Christianity or anything else. And we heard from one of the earlier callers that she was both a Christian and a practicing Wiccan, which is something that you'll hear from a number of people. The drug gangs and such who are engaged in using witchcraft, they're just greedy. They're just out for power. They're just out to control their own little fiefdom. I don't think they want to overthrow nations or anything like that. I think they just have the intent to carve out their own economic fiefdom. They rule by terror, they rule by violence, and they employ whatever weapons they can. But the vast majority of people practicing Wiccan wouldn't recognize the idea of trying to destroy anything. And again, I would say to the woman that you were mentioning, don't try to destroy Christianity. Try to fulfill it. You know, you don't want to emulate your father by trying to destroy something. You want to lift things up.
With witchcraft, how many witches, practicing witches, do you think there are just in the United States, Mitch?
According to the best data that we have, I would say it probably hovers about 1 to 1.5 million folks who identify themselves as...
That's a pretty big number.
...neo-pagan. Say again?
That's a good number.
Yeah, it's quite a few people. quite a few people, most of them very educated, intelligent, engaged, plugged into the political process. It's a large and growing community.
Do they generally hide what they do?
Not generally. I don't know people who are particularly shy about it. Some people may be private, and that's entirely understandable, but usually people are very articulate and pretty straightforward, but they don't run around, you know, to advertise it, but if asked, they'll be very forthright. They might wear something that indicates their devotion, like a pentagram or something like that. Other people are private.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Susan, in Bremerton, Washington. Hi, Susan. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi.
Am I clear? I've got a kind of a...
Yeah, you're pretty good.
Okay. I called in mainly because I had spent a couple of years being a volunteer Wiccan chaplain at a prison.
Oh.
And that was so fulfilling. It was really interesting. And I will admit to the referring to the caller before, but yeah, my foot slipped a couple of times when I was younger, and I got my fingers burned, and I learned really quickly that doing things wrong, doing things to hurt someone isn't a good idea. But then how can you talk to someone who has kind of messed up their life in one way or another in prison without understanding?
Well, that's kind of tough too, isn't it? It's a difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, I think people who engage in Wicca, ceremonial magic, they probably, if they fall off the path and if they engage in something that's designed to hurt or manipulate another person, you know, the caller used the phrase, she got her fingers burned. I think people learn that fairly quickly, that reciprocity and the law of reciprocity is a very real thing, and we all face it every day. And it's important to keep in mind, including in terms of ordinary things, when we gossip, when we spread rumors, when we do things that are going to assassinate or harm other people's character, it opens us up to terrible influences. Best thing you can do to improve your life immediately, stop gossiping. Improvements will appear in your life almost immediately. I would challenge everybody to test me on that. Stop gossiping. You want to try some real magic? Good things will come into your life immediately.
Why do spells generally work?
I think we are connected, George, in a non-physical way. I don't think flesh and bone is all that we are. And I think that when we embody an intention and sometimes use ritual or a spell to kind of enhance that intention and bring an emotional tone to it and expand it in some way, it has an effect. I think attention has an effect all the time. It's happening all around us. But when people use ritual to enhance a sense of intention, it can be very powerful. And I think we are connected that way.
I think we are too. Mitch, would you give out your website? Tell us about your books. We'll take a break, then we'll come back with final calls.
Sure thing. It's MitchHorowitz.com. People can reach me through there. I'm on sabbatical right now, but I'm back right after Halloween. My books are Occult America and One Simple Idea, which is a history and analysis of positive thinking. All of it is linked up on the Coast to Coast website.
What do you mean you're on sabbatical? You're working your tail off for us tonight.
It's hard to say that it's work. I'm doing a lot of writing. I just completed a new book about Edgar Cayce. A lot of interesting things going on. So I call it a sabbatical, but it's a pleasure because I'm getting a lot done.
All right, stay with us. Mitch Horowitz with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls as we talk about witches and witchcraft. And then next hour, we begin our special Sound Off Open Lines. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mitch Horowitz with us as we talk about witches and the occult. There is a scary part of the occult portion of this, Mitch, isn't there?
Well, you know, human nature has a corrupt side to it, and that's true universally. And when a corrupt individual gets involved with practices that are designed to enhance intention, to enhance power, yes, scary things can happen. And that's true in every walk of life. If you have people with bad intentions who are given a live wire, you have to watch out. So anybody who wishes other people ill, like some of these narcotics gangs that we've been talking about, who gets involved in witchcraft. There's a scary side to it, yes.
Since you've been doing this, have you come across anything that you thought was, I don't want to say scary, but strange, bizarre?
You know, the truth is, George, in the occult field, I've never come across individuals or practices that have personally disturbed me. The thing that disturbs me is when, you know, people get abused, people get ripped off. I get very disturbed at the amount of vitriol and hatred that gets spread on social media. I'm absolutely shocked.
Oh my God, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a national poison. It's a smog. So, you know, when I go onto message boards and when I see how uninhibited people feel about just expressing absolute raw hatred, that disturbs me vastly more than anything I've ever encountered in my study of the occult.
All right, let's go back and take some final phone calls with Mitch Horowitz. We'll go to Kevin in Norwich, Connecticut to get this segment going. Hey, Kev, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, buddy? Kevin.
Happy Halloween.
You too.
Mitch, I'm enjoying the show, and you're taking some good calls as well. I sort of have a two-parter from the perspective of someone who is a Christian. I attend church regularly. I'm active with my church, my diocese, ecumenical things between different denominations of the Christian faith in my community. I also think Wiccan or Wiccanism is a wonderful thing. I'm a person who's about the similarities we have, not the differences. But to my two-part question, number one, in your study, do you see it as problematic that the modern church has interpreted some of the, and the Christian church is what I'm talking about, interpreted some of the old scriptures as saying that nature and God are at odds with each other? And I'm paraphrasing, I'm not quoting the Bible or anything else, but that's generally the teaching that one gets. And I've talked to ministers and priests and theologians about this, and it seems like it could, without getting, you know, I could take half an hour of the show.
Yeah.
It's a stumbling block. The part two of my question is, don't you think, and again, I come from the perspective of the Episcopal Church, which is one denomination of the Christian faith among many, but don't you think that some of the mainstream churches are becoming a little more accepting of the fact that nature just might be, and these are my words, a sacrament of God? And we're seeing more prayers in the church about caring for nature and taking care of the farms and fields and animals and so forth. So if I could get your sort of response to those thoughts, they might be real helpful.
Yeah, thank you. That's a wonderful question. I mean, obviously, you know, some people take the notion in Scripture that man shall have dominion over nature to suggest not only that man is somehow at odds with nature, but that things like climate change and other such things are outside of human hands in a certain sense. But other Christian denominations, particularly within the Episcopal congregation, understand that stewardship of the environment is what man is charged with in Scripture, that the implication of dominion means stewardship. If you say a parent has dominion over his children, obviously you're implying something beneficent. So, and I think we're seeing that within evangelical circles as well. The dominionist perspective is experiencing a real challenge among evangelicals, some of whom are very straightforward about saying we have to have stewardship over the environment, pay attention to things like climate change. When you're in charge of something, it means you're supposed to treat it well. You've been given the car keys. You're expected to take care of the car, so to speak. So I think you're absolutely right on, and we're seeing an opening in all kinds of congregations, including evangelical congregations, where the environment is being viewed in a really serious way.
Where does the devil fit into this, Mitch?
That's the great question, because going back to late antiquity, practitioners of nature religions have been accused of Satan worship. They never viewed themselves that way at all. Now, you have a very few self-styled people in the modern world who call themselves Satanists. Now, most of them are kind of crafting and minting their own traditions. There's no lineage, there's no family tree. Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, wrote something called the Satanic Bible, but that was Anton's own creation. So you don't really have a liturgy, a history of Satan worship in Western history. You do have some modern individuals who will call themselves Satanists, sometimes just to be provocative, sometimes because they are fascinated with exploring the dark side, so to speak. But in most cases, they are minting their own traditions. They are inventing their own traditions. And again, I tell people all the time, if you want to look for evil in modern culture, don't worry about the Church of Satan. Worry about the fine print in your credit card bill, because you're going to find a lot more evil there than you're going to find among so-called Satanists.
Probably. What about positive thinking? How does that play into, you know, making things happen for yourself? Good spells, things like that.
Yeah, you can see positive thinking as a kind of white magic. You know, people think that positive thinking is kind of this namby-pamby thing that belongs to inspirational calendars and, you know, magnets of smiley faces that you put up on your refrigerator. But there's a magic in positive thinking, because I do think that we are all connected in non-physical ways, and that intention does have causative properties. And if you can augment good intention through different practices, whether it's using affirmations, using prayer, using visualizations, whether it's trying to find ways of putting positive emotions at the back of things that you want to accomplish, there's a power in that, and it's very real. So I take positive thinking very, very seriously. It's something that we're likely to kind of take for granted because it seems so domestic, it seems so ordinary. It's not. You know, there's real power there in focusing and honing your intentions. That's what I write about in my book, One Simple Idea.
Let's go to Pete in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on the wild card line. Pete, go ahead.
Thank you, George. Mitch, I need your help. I know a black magic witch in New York City, and I know she put a spell on me. We had a big feud, and for the past 6 months, my life has completely changed. I'm slightly disabled. I lost my job. I lost the family house. Everything has gone wrong. What can I do to reverse this curse that she has put on me? What can I do?
I would go on a program of prayer. Right off the bat, I would go on a program of prayer.
Intense
prayer. You ask a higher power to come to your ability. Make sure that you are avoiding gossip, avoiding rumor, avoiding any kind of character assassination. Read great ethical works of literature. Read the Beatitudes. Read the Bhagavad Gita. Read the Tao Te Ching. And you will realize that the ultimate arc of the universe does bend towards the good, and that you have got good and rightness at your back. And you put yourself on the side of good by engaging in intense prayer and making sure that you are striving every day to live by the golden rule, not only in your actions, but also in your thoughts. And you will be free. You have goodness at your back, and what you're experiencing, and I'm very sorry for it, it will not last.
Mitch, are you a believer that good wins out over evil all the time?
Ultimately, George, I believe it does. Evil is a real thing in our world, and the suffering that people experience can just bring you to your knees. But I don't think it's the ultimate reality of life. The ultimate reality of life is generativity. I mean, we look at the seasons. You know, everything is followed cyclically by its opposite. And I think the good ultimately always wins out, just as the harvest always comes, no matter how bitter the winter is, just as the drought always ends. And the good seasons outlast the bad, ultimately. So I do believe evil is real, but I do believe that good is the ultimate law of the universe.
Can anybody cast the spell? Good or bad?
I really think so, yes. It depends upon your dedication. It depends upon what you bring to it. You know, somebody asked me earlier today, is there a connection between magic and writing? And there are several connections, but one of them is to be a good writer or to be good at anything, you have to demonstrate incredible dedication. to cast a spell, to cast some sort of a successful ritual. You have to prepare yourself. Some people fast, some people eat lightly, some people engage in prayer, meditation. You have to be in a kind of exquisitely sensitive state. And then whatever you do, whether it be your thoughts, your intentions, or something that involves some sort of a ceremony or ritual, it will be more powerful. So anybody can do it, but it does require some dedication.
Jim in Lincoln, Nebraska, it's your turn. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hey, well, I wish both of you guys a happy Halloween.
Well, you too.
Season of the Witch.
Enjoy?
Yeah. And I was just going to tell you, I got married in 1990. It lasted for almost a decade until December of 1999, when it became apparent that my wife was a practicing witch. And and I don't mean the type you guys have been talking about tonight. She was just a witch. And so anyway, they walk among us. That's all.
All right. Yeah. Well, maybe they do walk among us in some form or fashion, Mitch.
Yeah. Again, you know, you're going to find people who bring good and bad into every practice, every community, every walk of life. Human nature is complex. And, you know, each moment, each day, we're all faced with ethical decisions. Whatever our background, whatever our range of practices, we're all called to either do good or bad. So you're going to find it everywhere.
In Vancouver, Washington, Howard's there, west of the Rockies. Howard, good morning.
Hello, George and Mitch.
Hi.
I heard a story some time back that I wondered if Mitch knew anything about.
All right, let's hear
it. In 1940, during the Battle of Britain, it said that the druids and witches came together and formed something they called a cone of power.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind it was to, of course, to thwart the German attack that was occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And about the same period of time, maybe coincidence, maybe not, Hitler decided to just inexplicably change his strategy. Instead of attacking the British airfields, he started attacking London.
Mm-hmm.
And this gave the RAF time to regroup and rebuild. And, of course, they were able to succeed in stopping the attack eventually. Now, I just wondered if you knew anything about this.
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I think that story is true. I can't speak to the fine details. I can't speak precisely to the cause and effect, but there are a number of respected people who were part of the Wiccan community in Great Britain, which is really the birthplace of a number of the neo-pagan practices that exist in the modern world today. And they have spoken of and written of gathering together to cast spells of resistance against Hitler and against the Nazis. Gerald Gardner, who was a great force in the revival of Wiccan practice in the modern world, wrote about being part of a coven that cast spells against Hitler and his intentions. So there's actually a fairly large literature among British occultists of druids, neo-pagans, Wiccans, who cast spells against the Nazis. And I think that is an authentic piece of occult history.
Mitch, we've talked about consciousness and positive thinking and being able to let the collective consciousness do things.
Mm-hmm.
On a plus, but let's talk about the negative too. If there are special groups out there who who hate our guts, who want bad things to happen to us, if they collectively get together and keep bombarding us with these things, will something bad happen?
I think,
or will it backfire on them?
Well, I think the answer is both. Both. You know, when people use intention for evil, yes, bad things do happen, and violence is real in our world. Evil is real. Suffering is real. But because of reciprocity, it always comes back to them. I wish it were the case that the destructive intentions didn't find any root at all, and that's why I think it's important that we strive at least to keep our own intentions pure, because I think that serves to promote the good and to deflect evil intent. But yes, it can have an effect, but ultimately and always, as sure as the sun rises, it's a natural law that the person who's channeling that evil intent is going to have it circle back to them. A boomerang effect is the closest thing to a universal law that we can identify.
Gene is in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Hi, Gene. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking the call, Mr. Norrie.
Very welcome.
Mr. Horowitz, I would like to thank you very much for your activism.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. I am a Wiccan priest, legal clergy in Missouri, coven trained in the UK. And to answer the previous caller's questions, one of my mentors participated in that cone of power raising in the 40s against Hitler. So, yes, that was an actual event. It did happen.
That is remarkable. What a piece of living history you are. I mean, that's incredible to have a mentor who engaged in that druidic action against the Nazis. That's incredible.
Well, it wasn't quite druidic. It was I should say it was a pan-neo-pagan event.
Yes.
There were many, many different paths that traditions that followed, that participated in that event. And it had its repercussions. Mm-hmm. Many of the people that participated in that event suffered serious illness and premature death.
It took a lot out of them, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did, Mr. Norrie. It most certainly did.
Wow, but, that's fascinating. So they sacrificed their own well-being for the greater good.
Go ahead, Gene. Go ahead.
I said, I wish you both a blessed Samhain. And Mr. Horowitz, I really hope you continue with your activism. As you said, a million and a half. I think the number is a little greater than that. But like you said, not all of us are out of the broom closet.
Well put. Thank you so much.
Mitch, we're out of time. Keep in touch with us, my friend. I love you. You know that. Mitch Horowitz, his website, MitchHorowitz.com. Up next, sound off open lines for a couple hours next on Coast to Coast AM.